Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'll be your host for this edition of the pod. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler and can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball related from Tuesday, June 30th. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league, kicking things off with the bad news as shortstop Jeremy Peña was placed on the 10-day IL with a calf strain. It's a mild strain, according to the Astros, so Peña is expected to miss the minimum time. Second baseman Raynel Delgado was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, but Nick Allen should take over as the Astros' everyday shortstop until Peña returns. Next, outfielder Dane Myers was placed on the 10-day IL with a shoulder contusion. He's been on the short side of a center field platoon for the Reds. Second baseman Ivan Johnson was selected from the minors in a corresponding move, and he should take over for Myers on the short side of a center field platoon. I know I said second baseman, but he's a very versatile fielder. And lastly, reliever Anthony Bender was placed on the 15-day IL with a shin stress reaction, an injury that he suffered last year as well, and that kept him out from August through the end of the year, so we could be without Bender for at least a few weeks. Reliever Zach Brzezicki was recalled for the minors in a corresponding move, but Michael Peterson and Calvin Fauché will be the top right-handed setup options for the Marlins. In terms of transactions, starting pitcher Robert Gasser was optioned to the minors. Milwaukee was running a six-man rotation, but they chose Shane Drohan and Brandon Sproat over Robert Gasser. Expect Drohan to join Gasser at AAA when Logan Henderson returns in the next couple of weeks from the injured list. Reliever Garrett Stallings was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. Next, catcher Liam Hicks was activated from the 10-day IL after missing over a month with a lower back strain. Hicks will see playing time at designated hitter, catcher, and first base, but he may be limited against left-handed pitchers. Third baseman Graham Pauly was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Next, starting pitcher Tanner Gordon was activated from the 15-day IL after missing about a month with a hip impingement. And I said that Hicks missed a month, but I'm realizing now my math on the spot wasn't too great. He missed, I think, the minimum time, 10 days for Liam Hicks. I was thinking, I don't remember him being out that long. So Hicks only missed 10 days. However, Tanner Gordon, he's been out since May 31st. So he missed a month, and he started versus the Marlins across from Liam Hicks, starting pitching five innings, allowing 9 hits and 5 earned runs, walking nobody while striking out 4. He induced 10 whiffs with 27% CSW across 74 pitches. And Gordon's four-seamers were actually great in this one with 7 whiffs and 83% strikes, despite poor shape in the unfriendly confines of Coors Field. But he located those four-seamers upstairs well, which helped them perform better than you would expect based on the pitch attributes. And in combination with changeups returning 3 whiffs and 82% strikes downstairs, that combination was pretty good. However, sliders returned just 46% strikes, and Gordon got blown up a little bit. This is not a guy to chase in fantasy leagues. Next, closing pitcher Emilio Pagan was activated from the 15-day IL after missing almost 2 months with a hamstring strain. Pagan will return to being the Reds' full-time closer. They have been in dire need of Pagan to return because that bullpen has just been in shambles all year. Reliever Zach McCambly was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And lastly, starting pitcher Brandon Font was recalled from the minors to start for the Diamondbacks against the Giants. He tossed 5 2/3 innings, allowing 3 hits and 1 run, walking 1 while striking out 2. He induced just 2 whiffs with 26% CSW across 66 pitches. Just 2 whiffs for Font in this one is not what you want to see. It's nice seeing him get back to throwing strikes, but I can't trust him if he's not getting swings and misses. Reliever Juan Burgess was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And in terms of news, starting pitcher Hunter Green is expected to be activated from the 60-day IL on Saturday to start versus the Orioles. He's missed all year after undergoing arthroscopic elbow surgery in March. So great to see Hunter Green returning for the Reds this weekend via a start in Baltimore. Now we can take a look at our notable performances from Tuesday, a day in which we had a full slate of 15 games. We'll start it off with our hitters, leading off with third baseman Junior Caminero, who went deep again in Kansas City, helping the Rays to a win. He went 2-for-5 with a run, a home run, and 3 runs batted in. It was his 23rd home run, and it traveled 438 feet at 109 miles per hour. Caminero's home run streak continued. That's 5 straight games with a homer for Caminero and 8 home runs in his last 7 games. Incredible power display from Caminero to close out June. Next, shortstop Bobby Witt Jr. did all he could across from Caminero, but the Royals lost to the Rays. He went 3-for-4 with 2 runs, 2 home runs, and 3 runs batted in. He's up to 12 homers on the year now. First one went 416 feet at 107 miles per hour, and the second one went 432 feet at 103 miles per hour. Bobby Witt leads the American League with 28 stolen bases, and he's having another typically excellent season. He's walking at a career high 11% rate, giving him plenty of opportunities to swipe bags. So continued excellence from Bobby Witt Jr. Another shortstop that had a multi-homer game, Dansby Swanson, helped the Cubs to win against the Padres, going 3-for-4 with 2 runs, 2 home runs, and 3 runs batted in. He's up to 13 homers now. First one went 432 feet at 104 miles per hour, and the second one went 437 feet at 104 miles per hour. Dansby cooled down immediately after his huge doubleheader against the Mets about a week ago, but the streaky hitter got back on track with another big game on Tuesday. Swanson's also walking more than ever at a 12% rate, and while his offense has been below league average, according to WRC Plus, his 13 homers and 10 steals make him an excellent fantasy contributor, especially for a 9-hole hitter. On the opposite side of Swanson, former shortstop outfielder Fernando Tatis Jr. did all he could, but the Padres lost on the north side of Chicago. He went 2-for-5 with 2 runs, 2 home runs, and 2 runs batted in. He's up to 5 homers on the year. First one went 425 feet at 106 miles per hour, and the second one went 370 feet at 96 miles per hour. Tatis famously went over 2 months without a homer to start the year, but since he's hit his first home run, he's batted 311 with 5 homers, 5 steals, and a WRC plus north of 130. That's right in line with his career marks. He's a career 133 WRC plus guy, and I think we can expect him to be the Tatis we've gotten used to moving forward. That means home runs, that means steals, and he's proven to have a better feel for contact and is showing the ability to bat over 300 for long stints. And lastly, we've got outfielder Riley Green, who helped the Tigers to win in the Bronx, going 2-for-4 with 2 runs, 2 home runs, and 3 runs batted in. He's up to 11 homers now. First one went 424 feet at 108 miles per hour, and the second one went 404 feet at 106 miles per hour. Green has traded power for batting average this year, batting 288 with just 11 homers, but he showed off his pop yesterday, and he's another guy who's walking more than ever at a 12% rate. Green has been an on-base machine with a 378 on-base percentage, and I think there's more room for his power to manifest in concert with his improved contact, making Green one of the best hitters in baseball, especially from the left side. But if you'd like a breakdown of other notable hitting performances from Tuesday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances, opening with Christopher Sanchez, who helped the Pirates to win against the Pirates, tossing the Phillies to win against the Pirates, tossing 7 shutout innings, allowing 3 hits and 2 walks while striking out 9. He induced 23 whiffs with 26% CSW, CSW across 92 pitches. Sinkers were not touched in this one as they stole 9 called strikes, while changeups induced 15 whiffs and sliders racked up 8 whiffs with 53% CSW. An incredible outing from Christopher Sanchez. He is so dope. He's the MLB leader with 117 innings pitched. He's second in MLB with his even 2 ERA and his 136 strikeouts, trailing only Jacob Mizorowski. And he's tied for second in wins behind Aaron Ashby, those darn Brewers. And if you're wondering, how did Christopher Sanchez get 23 whiffs and not win the Gallows Bowl? That's because Cade Cavalli had the performance of his career in Boston, helping the Nationals to win, tossing 7 shutout innings, allowing just 1 hit, walking nobody while fanning 13. He induced 25 whiffs with 41% CSW across 100 pitches, and Cavalli earned the Golden Goal as he induced 25 whiffs to lead baseball for the Gallows Pole and earned the King Cole by leading baseball with his 41% CSW. Cavalli fanned a career-high Baker's dozen Red Sox across 7 one-hit frames. Incredible performance, and he displayed increased velocity across the board just like he did last time, but it was most prevalent on his curve, which was up 2 ticks, sitting 87 to 88 miles per hour, and that's a devastating hammer curve for a pitch with negative 11 inches of induced vertical break. Just incredibly hard curveball there from Cade Cavalli. It's his signature offering, and while it was dope with 3 whiffs and 40% CSW, this was actually a game of his four-seamer overwhelming a club that's weak against right-handed pitchers. 97 plus mile per hour fastballs blew past hitters all game with 15 whiffs, and there was potential for even more whiffs and maybe a little more damage as the pitch returned 16 foul balls for a 34% foul ball rate. We'd expect that rate to regress moving forward, which could lead to more whiffs, but also could lead to more balls in play. And while the heater and the hook were amazing, the support did not stop there as sweepers recorded 53% CSW and sinkers grabbed a trio of whiffs and 75% strikes. However, the most notable change of all for Cavalli was that the four-seamer wasn't merely a four-seamer. StatCast failed to pick up his new cutter, which he threw 11 times in the mid-90s, and it was pretty hectic, but it induced 3 whiffs, and it could be the glue pitch that allows him to avoid damage on his empty velocity heaters. I know the heaters were great in this one, but in the past, that has been the real only problem with Cavalli. That curveball is great. He throws hard. He just does not have good shape on his four-seamer and sinker. So maybe the cutter could be the pitch that allows him to survive in the zone. This is the second start that we've seen him deploy that pitch and the second time that StatCast has failed to pick it up. And given the results here, the cutter could be an X factor for Cavalli. Let's keep an eye out on it as we give him another go versus the Astros next. Reminder, he has a 28% strikeout rate across his last 13 starts, so there's certainly a ceiling to be chasing with Cade Cavalli. Next, we have Matthew Liberatore, who helped the Cardinals to win in Atlanta, tossing 5 innings, allowing just 1 hit and 1 run, walking 4 while striking out 9. He induced 15 whiffs with 35% CSW across 98 pitches. And man, this Braves lineup is really struggling. They had the lowest WRC plus in June by far, and Liberatore dominated them. Dominating them is a clear example of that struggling Braves lineup. The Southpaw entered the start with a 10.94 ERA across his previous 4 outings. So to see him perform so well here, I think is just a testament to how much the Braves lineup is struggling. But Liberatore leaned heavily into sliders as they induced 9 whiffs and 41% CSW, but he was lucky to avoid getting bit by the 4 walks as he did a great job of avoiding balls in play. I think just 7 balls in play as he was just either striking guys out or walking guys. This was the first time that Liberatore has induced double-digit whiffs in over a month, so I'm not ready to go trusting him right away, but he does get the Braves again after he heads to the north side of Chicago, and he could make it work there again. That's a super sneaky deep league stream, not something I'm doing in standard leagues. And lastly, we have Justin Wroblewski, who helped the Dodgers to win in Sacramento, tossing 7 innings, allowing 7 hits and 300 runs, walking nobody while fanning 11. He induced 20 whiffs with 33% CSW across 110 pitches. Pretty impressive outing for Wroblewski in the unfriendly confines of Sutter Health Park. Wroblewski has been great this year. 10 wins have him tied for second in MLB, and he has a 2.80 ERA and a 1.01 whip. But I was worried that Wroblewski didn't have the strikeout upside to make him someone that you really hold on to tightly in standard fantasy leagues. But he proved me wrong here with a season-high 11 punchouts. 4 seamers at 95 miles per hour dominated with 13 whiffs and 80% strikes. But he might have been lucky to get away with 15 foul balls in the same way that Cavalli had a lot of foul balls. We could have seen Wroblewski seen that mark regress, and we could see more whiffs, or we could see more balls in play. Ultimately, I would have expected more balls in play. I know the four-seamer was a whiff machine here, but it has not been that throughout the season. They could have been whiffs, but like I said, they also could have contributed to the 4 hits that the heater allowed in this one. I'm more of a believer in Wroblewski than I have been all season, and it's not just a product of this start. It's also a product of him throwing his four-seamer harder at 95 instead of the 93 to 94 that we saw earlier this year, and because he's expanded his arsenal beyond just fastballs and sliders. He was going like 90% four-seamer slider at the beginning of the year, and I just have faith that even if he's not striking out 11 plus batters in multiple games moving forward. I think the ratios are great. The win chance is awesome. And the Dodgers let him go really deep into games, 110 pitches here. And he could have another great start versus Rocky Road next. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Tuesday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Starting with the former, Tyler Schweitzer recorded his first save as he had four scoreless innings to lock down that save. Jacob Latz pitched a perfect ninth for his 18th save. Devin Williams recorded his 12th save with a scoreless ninth. Riley O'Brien also had a scoreless ninth for his 21st save. Ryan Rollison got the final out of the game for his first save. It's weird usage for the Cubs, but that bullpen is in shambles right now, so we could see some weird save chances and save opportunities for the Cubs moving forward. And lastly, Josh Hader pitched a perfect ninth for his eighth save. And in terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, Raisel Iglesias pitched a perfect ninth down by two, and Andrés Muñoz pitched a perfect ninth with a five-run lead. But if you'd like more information on relief pitchers, check out Rick Graham's daily articles over on pitcherlist.com. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now we'll look forward to Wednesday, July 1st, as we'll have a short slate of 14 games. And my matchup of the day is a pretty obvious one, as we'll see Paul Skeen square off against Zach Wheeler, two of the best arms in baseball, two of the best arms in the National League, as we have the Pirates squaring off against the Phillies. Skeen versus Wheeler, that's going to be a fun one to watch. In terms of probable starters, we've got two guys in the auto starts tier. If you can probably guess those, it's Skeen and Wheeler. Our probably starts tier has four guys, and our questionable starts tier has nine, and that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in Colin Ray versus the Padres. That Padres lineup isn't scary, and Ray has done very good against lineups that aren't scary this year. Not the highest ceiling, but certainly a solid streamer. I'd also keep an eye out for Shane Drohan versus the Reds. Drohan has been fine thus far, nothing spectacular, and the Reds are not great on the road, and they haven't been good against fastballs up in the zone, which Drohan has the ability to locate. So I'm looking for him to do that, and he should be pretty solid against the Reds there. That's Shane Drohan versus the Reds. I think if you're looking for a pitcher with an opener, Patrick Corbin should get an opener. He might be the bulk guy. It's not confirmed yet, but we got Braden Fisher starting for the Blue Jays today, and he's definitely not going to go more than two innings at most. So the Blue Jays could have an opener on Wednesday. And in terms of hitter suggestions, I target Giants and Diamondbacks hitters in Chase Field. Trevor McDonald is squaring off against Zach Gallen. McDonald has a 4.92 ERA and Gallen has a 6.15 ERA. So we could see some fireworks against those two struggling arms. I'd also target Marlins and Rockies hitters in Coors Field. We've got Max Meyer squaring off against Kyle Freeland and his 7.5 ERA. Freeland, not great this year. Max Meyer has been great this year, but we are in course to target Marlins and Rockies hitters. And lastly, I'd look at Dodgers and A's hitters in Sutter Health Park. We got Charlie Barnes squaring off against JT Ginn. Not confirmed that Barnes is being called up, but the Dodgers haven't announced a starter, and Barnes seems like the most likely guy to get promoted from AAA to have a spot start here in Sutter Health Park. It's not a good pitcher's park, so we could see some big offense here in the final game of the series between the Dodgers and A's in Sutter Health Park. Now we can close things out with our relievers to watch. Josh Hader has pitched in three of the past 4 days, but so has Brian King. So if the Astros want to give the two Southpaws a rest, Brian Abreu could get a shot at a save for the Astros. And on the other side of Texas, Jacob Latz has pitched on back-to-back days, so expect Jacob Junis to be the top option out of the Rangers bullpen on Wednesday. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all of the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcher List staff. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler, where I do daily SP streamers and I break down every single start via the Pitcher List stats player cards. Tune into YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast, and make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
This has been the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at PitcherList, and help support what we do by joining our Discord with PitcherList Plus at PitcherList.com/plus.